Good morning, welcome evening to the hello afternoon, welcome to Paul Thatcher. Come on now, do it properly! Hello, good afternoon, morning or evening, or welcome to the Parthax Diary Podcast. The week commences in the 22nd of October in the year of our Lord 2000 and something, whatever year you're listening to. You remember last week, me and Tony were on a quest for a diet so I can lose some of my chunky blubbery flabs. Mum says I'm too fat because my cardigan pinged off my tummy, broke a vase. Me, Eugene and Cecil are going today to do the final quest to get the beast of something. Anyway, I'm sure the diary will explain that. So let's just crack on, shall we, Cecil, if you'd like to begin the reading. Hymn number 555. See your handbook book in any quincos. 2.
22nd of October.
Thank you, Cecil. Tony, Eugene and Cecil and myself all gathered in the living room. Eugene brought his friend Brian. None of us had ever met him before, and for some very odd reason he was wearing a full 1960s replica of a Star Trek uniform, the red variety. I didn't ask him why, but... I've got an itchy foot. Sorry, I did ask him why, but he didn't really tell me. He just said he liked it. Tony said... move the microphone a bit up. Slouching. Tony told us what the final part of the quest entailed. We were to travel back to the North Yorkshire Moors, back where we camped up there before, and find the beast of Bivramenturnus. Once we've located its lair, someone will play the Ballad of the Unwise Ones on the Pipes of Peace, which will both attract the beast and subdue it, while someone else throws the concoction of that bile stuff we got and the liquor that Eugene had on its head. Then someone else gets very close and blows the mist up the beast's nose, and that makes it unconscious for some reason. While I then have to stab it through the skull with that horn we got in that cave ages ago, do you remember? The horn's from the beast, and it's the only thing powerful enough to pierce the beast's armour-plated head. I'm gonna murder it. I asked Dad if maybe I could just go on a slim fast diet, but he said they were too expensive. This was the only possible solution. So I ran and hid into my bedroom and didn't come out. Several minutes later, Brian came into my room. He sat next to me on the bed and tried to give me a rousing speech. You know, like you get in those underdog American films. You know, it was meant to inspire me or rouse me into action, but it didn't. This idiot didn't know how to motivate me. No matter how much he said, I would gain self-respect or dignity. As if that's something I've ever been bothered about. The fool knows nothing. If I'd ever been cared about self-respect, I wouldn't be the bloated, self-hating, coder-obsessed, blubby boy I am, would ya? Eh? A few minutes later, Tony came in and explained that the only way to get the beast back was to find the signal that Tony had put inside Teddy Watkins, that Teddy Watkins was transmitted. So if we find Teddy Watkins, we find the beast. And we rescue Teddy Watkins, we kill the beast. That's how you motivate Brian, with Teddy power. You see, because Tony obviously explained that he put the thing in Teddy Watkins to track the beast, and he knew the beast would take it back to its lair. That's why Teddy Watkins was such a necessary sacrifice in the quest. I asked Tony if Mr. Watkins would be okay, and Tony just said,
all things shall become clear in time.
Which, when you read on or listen on, certainly will become clear. So, we got to the camping equipment. We got the camping equipment from the garage, or garage. Eugene asked Tony where the tent he'd lent him was, and Tony didn't tell him that he'd set it on fire. He just said he didn't know. So we drove up there, Tony had to borrow his wife's car. We had a lovely chat. Turns out Brian was 2 days away from retirement. He's also getting married in a week, and his wife-to-be's just given birth this morning, and he hasn't even seen his new baby yet. It's going to be an exciting afternoon for him when he gets finished with this tomorrow. By about 2:30 in the afternoon, we'd gotten to where me and Tony had camped before. Eugene saw the remains of the tent, and he just stared at Tony and said,
"You're paying for that."
And that's all he said, don't matter. We set up the new camp, and within minutes, Brian had got the campfire going. He told us about how his brother gets out of prison tomorrow, and he's not seen him in 25 years. Oof, the next few days certainly sounded like they were going to be very, very busy for poor old Brian. By nightfall, Tony had got the device for picking up Teddy Watkins' signal working. Teddy Watkins was 700 metres away from us. And just one more night's sleep, we'll be reunited. Or so Tony said. We were to set off at first light. It was too dangerous to travel on the moors at night. So we all huddled in the four-man tent Brian had brought, and Tony kept watch on his transmission device, and we could see the signal moving, which meant that the beast was carrying Teddy Watkins in a rudimentary papoose or bum bag. Well, I hoped anyway. I didn't want him just going in a Tesco's carrier bag. They're not very breathable.
23rd of October, I beg your pardon, Paul.
Come on, Cecil, concentrate here.
Sorry, I'm too excited. I know today is a big day for you.
Yeah, it is. Well, diary-wise. Not actually today, I'm just sitting here eating crisps, pooing myself. Right, 23rd of October, at around 4 a.m, the slug things were back, crawling all over the tent. This time not completely enveloping it this time, but this was a much bigger tent too. And we could see by the scanner that Teddy Watkins was just 15 feet away. We dare not speak for fear of the beast attacking us. We were only in a flimsy fabric house. Tony texted us that he speculated that the slug things were actually some kind of tendril or feeler of the beast. You know, much like, I don't know, an alien might have coming out of its mouth that tongues you. I feared it was like a massive radioactive cockroach outside. You know, you never know what the government's experimenting on the moors, do you? It's so remote. We sat still for another 3 hours, and the slug things just continued to crawl over the tent. And then, when dawn came, they moved away, as did the signal from Teddy Watkins. We waited another 15 minutes, then we all made our moor there. We got all the component parts that we needed. Dad got the pipe of peace and the music. You know, he's the only one that can read sheet music. Tony got the bile and the liquor. And it had to be mixed and thrown together within 15 seconds, otherwise it would lose potency. And then Brian had the very dangerous task of somehow getting up close and personal with the beast and blowing the mist up its nostrils. But worst of all, I had the horn. It's just because I was a bit sleepy. I also had the horn of the beast, which was needing to be smashed through its skull once the beast was subdued. We exited the tent and looked around at the dim landscape. The area was covered in that bile stuff. There was a horrible smell of rancid eggs, and in the distance we heard terrifying sounds, like a pig squeal crossed between a donkey neighing. We slowly made our way towards the signal. In time we came to what appeared to be a dry stone hut, but the roof had collapsed long ago, so it was just a dry stone wall hut without a roof, which is probably what you understood from when I first said that. Tony gave the signal to Cecil to play the pipes of peace, but Cecil misconstrued the hand gesture and thought Tony was swearing at him. Dad said to him,
"Go sod yourself sideways with a 9-iron, you bastard."
He was tired and grumpy. But then there was noises from inside the hut. Stirrings and a whirrings. Dad frantically started playing the pipes. Pan pipes, that is. And we all girded our loins. Well, I had an itch. I don't know what the rest did. We were ready for the battle ahead. Suddenly, two long, pinkish, lumpy tongue-like tentacles shot out of the hut, hitting Brian square in the face and chesticle. He was dragged through the air into the hut, Then we heard screamings, crashing and tearing noises. Seconds later, blood and a ribcage flew out the door of the hut, hitting Dad on the head. Dad fell. Eugene turned to run, but the tentacle shot out and hit him in the leg, and he began to be being dragged towards the hut. A look of terror on his twisted, brummy face is something I will never ever forget. Frantically, he tried to free himself, but the second he touched the tentacles on the hands, his hands became glued to them. A split second later, he flew into the hut. A gut-wrenching scream, brummy scream, filled the air, and all we heard was violent thrashing around, a scream, tearing, then a jet of red liquid shot out of the hut's window. Suddenly, a loud, piercing, shrill note burst forth from Cecil. He began playing the hot pipes of peace, in inhuman volumes. I almost fell to my knees, it was so shrill. I looked at Tony, and he screamed at me, saying,
"This is it!"
The noise Dad was making was so loud I could hardly hear him. Tony got the two liquids and poured them into a small stone bowl and he mixed them. And then a huge hulking mass appeared at the door of the hut. This was it. The beast of Bivramramramus. Murderer of Eugene and that Brian guy. Worst of all, it had Teddy Watkins in a toy cupboard. Or whatever the evil equivalent is. Maybe a tea chest from India. Don't know. I heard a scream from Tony, and he ran towards the black mass. The beast stood in the doorway. All I could make out were three horns surrounded by an ethereal black hulk. Tony got within 2 foot of the creature, but with one massive swipe of its arm, it threw him 10 feet through the air. The creature then charged at Cecil. Its full mass came to view, must have been about 7 foot tall, walking on four legs. And within two strides it had reached Dad, and with one thrust of its head, it had impaled Cecil with its three horns. It lifted Cecil up in the air, waved his corpse around from side to side, and then just chucked him against the side of an hut. There was a crack of bones, and just shit everywhere. For what seemed like an eternity, we stood, just looking at each other, in the very dim half-light. With sleep deprivation and death of my father and friends, and that Brian bloke, who, you know, I never would have expected he died. He seemed like he had so much to live for. I went temporarily insane. I screamed and ran up to the beast, but the beast didn't move an inch, terrified by my vast stinking bulk. I got within spitting distance of its horns, and then I dropped to the floor. I thought, hey up, I'm going to be crafty here, not going to stab it through the head. Because it swiped at me, but I was out of its horny reach. And I did a sort of forward run and positioned myself under one of its four legs so that its soft, delicate underbelly was exposed to me. And then I got the horn in my hand, but not my penis, the actual horn from the beast. And I thrust it up with all the might of an insane, chunky, blobby boy. The horn tore through the fur and the flesh of the beast. The beast recoiled. It started to stagger, and then it fell down. I got up and moved to its face so I could watch the life drain from the bastard's face, eyes and mouth. I got near its mouth so I could make sure I heard its last breath. Then something odd happened. It said, "Oh, you fucking idiot! I'm gonna kill you!" I recoiled, slightly horrified it could talk. Then its belly started to pulsate. I could hear it saying, "Oh, fucking hell, oh, you bastard." And then another voice said,
"Get your ass out of my face."
Suddenly, a blinding light burst from all around me. Horrified, I put my hand to my forehead, and I could just make out an outline of thin figures all around me, slowly approaching me with outstretched arms. One of them said,
"Paul, please put down the horn."
My mind began to unravel. I knew aliens were real. I always suspected I was from another planet. That would explain the constant hunger. A few seconds passed and my eyes adjusted to the harsh alien light. I looked around at the creatures surrounding me. They all held strange devices on the shoulders. Large black boxes with glass circles on the front of them. And one of them had a long rod with some kind of furry animal attached to the end, which he began to dangle above me head. My eyes sorted themselves, and I blinked a bit and looked again. It wasn't aliens. It was a film crew. Walking out towards me was a man in a long black leather coat with overly gelled hair and a ridiculous 1980s style power beard. He walked up to me, put his arm around me, turned to the camera and said, "Paul, you've just been bamboozled. I'm Bamboozle, and for the past month you've been unsuspectingly been taking part in Bamboozle. You fell for it hook, line, and sinker. We tricked you with a series of hypnotic suggestions and good old smoke and mirrors." At this point, I wasn't thinking too clearly. Any thoughts of a public appearance or any kind of moral compass just went right out the window. I turned to this gelled up ponce and asked him if my father and friends and Teddy Watkins were all right. He said they were. It's all been a massive, massive prank. I then, without thinking, kicked this man as hard as humanly possible in the genital cluster. He fell to his poncy knees, so I kneed him in the face. Some of the TV people ran over and wrestled me away from him. A few hours later, when I was in the back of a very posh looking Land Rover type thing, the director came over and had a long talk with me. I told him I was going to sue him and the channel for everything they had for emotional trauma that they'd caused me. I told him there was no way they could do or say anything that would deter me from this course of action. I said, "It's going to affect me for the rest of my life, this. How could I trust my friends and family with all this going on?" The director then produced Teddy Watkins, who had a cheque for £3,500 tied to his arm. The producer or director or whatever the hell he was said,
"This is for you, if you play nice."
I took the cheque and Teddy Watkins, we reshot the bit with Bamboozle, where I just acted all happy and surprised about being tricked and lied to for weeks. They then took me through all the behind the scenes stuff. The monster was actually just two men in an animatronic suit, and I'd accidentally stabbed one of them in the thigh with that horn. The tentacles were just bits of rope with Velcro on them. It was very dimmed in my defence. Brian and Eugene and Tony had been pulled into the hut with some kind of wire work, and then some helpers had just jumped around and screamed and threw pretend guts and blood out the door. Cecil being stabbed was done with a retractable horn in the beast's head, like what you'd get in a kid's toy knife. And apparently the slugs on the tent were just people with paintbrushes painting this pretend bile stuff on that goes a bit hard after you leave it for a bit. Must have cost an absolute fucking fortune. And the worst part of it is that the programme doesn't even air in the UK, airs in Holland or somewhere odd. The only bit they don't understand is that the monks in the cave were nothing to do with them whatsoever. Don't understand what's going on there. Oh. 24th of October! When I got home last night at about 11:30, Mum was abed. When I saw her this morning, I showed her the cheque for £3,500. She snatched it off me and said, "That should just about cover it." Then she left the house for 4 hours. When she got back, she said nothing, but she did give me some crisps and a 2-litre bottle of low-quality cola beverage, full of sugar. So I guess my diet's back to normal. Thankfully, anyway. Well, I hope that this wasn't all just a huge, massive, giant, gargantuan hallucination brought on by the lack of snack foods. I suspect it might have been. Don't know. 25th of October. 8:43 wagon wheels today. 26th of October. I got up at about 2 p.m. and went into the living room, where Mum and Dad were hunched over, though this time they were not engaged in coitus. Rather, they were both looking on the floor for Mum's contact lens. Apparently it shot out of her eye when she tried to wink at Dad, like Anne Robinson. She's something she does, it's kind of a sexual signal for them, apparently, so that I don't know what they're doing. Though I didn't know she dropped a contact lens at the time, and they didn't tell me, so when I felt something crunch under my foot, which was obviously Mum's glass contact lens. She's had it for decades. Not contact lens, what do you call them? Monocle. Not a stupid boy. Yeah, I broke it. Though how they couldn't find it on the floor, I'll never know. When Mum realised I'd smashed it, she gave me one of her looks. So I ran out of the room, and I knew I would have to stay in my bedroom till tea time. Though I didn't mind, because I still had a few packets of Wagon Wheels up there. Delicious, circly snack. 27th of October. Alright, Cecil.
Yes, I was just doing it with a bit of revelry, for it's an important date in your life, Paul.
Tis, you're right. Let's carry on. 22nd of October. I went with Mum to the hairdresser again. I hoped that that model woman who had been there months ago would come back. But she didn't. I sat in there for 40 minutes next to two old biddies. They were both sat at either side of me talking to each other. Over me to each other. Don't know why they did that. So I heard every single line of their inane chatter. And they were shouting. 95% of their talk revolved around their grandchildren, who, if I'm honest, sounded like absolute shits. Pearl's grandson had just gone to prison for beating up his own granddaughter because she'd stabbed a nun who tried to get in to the house. Don't know why, and don't know what they were talking about. But then Beatrice thought it was very shocking and hated the way that the world was now. Apparently in her day you could leave your doors open, parade naked around your living room so no one would even think of raping you. To which Pearl said, "Well, it's all the blacks these days." At which point I thought, right, forget this, I have to say something, they're not going to do out. So, I said something. I told them they were being bigoted racists who didn't know what they were talking about. They've not lived in the modern world properly. And then they just both started laughing at me. I felt like slapping them. Abusing a pensioner, yes, but, you know, being rude at me. But then Pearl said they were just saying the worst things they could think of to see if they'd get a reaction out of me. Apparently they were friends of Mum's and they knew who I was, and they wondered if I'd dare speak out like a social justice warrior. Apparently they were both pleasantly surprised by my outburst and they gave me a toffee each. Mum came back from the hairdresser area and she was now sporting the tightest perm I'd ever seen. She talked to Pearl and Beatrice for 10 minutes. I sat there chewing toffees. Nearly choked on one, but then I didn't. It was alright, I rescued myself.
That's not the diary entry I thought it was, Paul.
I thought you were blathering on about something stupid.
Sorry.
Go on.
Oh, 28th of October.
Today, totally boring day today. I thought about doing work on the album, but then I fell asleep and ended up dreaming about drowning in several ponytails. It was a weird dream. I woke up chewing a cushion with tassels on. Weird. And about 5:30, Dad got a phone call which went exactly like this. Cecil.
Hello? Yes, this is Cecil. Are you joking? 6 weeks? You utter bastard.
Then he slammed the phone down and he just sat there saying,
"Unbelievable!"
to himself until I plucked up the courage to ask him what the matter was. Apparently the process they'll be using to extract the key for that flicking silver trinket box said that to make the key is going to take at least another 6 weeks. They were having a lot of trouble trying to get from the pictures of Cecil's burn how to get it properly, so it's just going to take a little while longer. Dad were furious. I told Cecil just to use the little blowtorch and melt the bloody lock on that silver trinket box so we can see what's in it. But Cecil refuses. He's for some reason still now convinced it holds the dinosaur DNA. And quite frankly, I'm just as sick as Mum is of hearing about this trinket box. The key doesn't work when we get it. I'm just going to smash the bloody thing on a wall till it opens. Stupid, isn't it? Sick of hearing about it. So sick of hearing about it. And that's all. Tune in next week where I'll talk more bullshit at you. Thank you very much. Goodbye.